Okay, well, thank you for coming out this morning early on a beautiful day. I'm going to spend a few minutes setting up the context of how I got involved in visualization and the focus and the sort of a different direction that I'm going to take from the other talks so far. There will be some mathematics. I'm not using PowerPoint, so there's a lot of distinguishing features. My background has been primarily in scientific computation and the development of effective software for different classes of differential equations, particularly ODEs. And I've had some contact with the visualization and with the robotics community in that we develop software for effectively approximating solutions to differential algebraic equations and ODEs. But more recently, I've realized that some of the techniques and some of the directions, approaches we'd introduced could apply to visualization, the visualization aspect of approximate solutions to partial differential equations. But the criteria is very different than the standard criteria in the computer graphics and vision people look at. In our case, we are interested in accuracy. We're interested in producing a visualization of an approximate solution that's non-distracting. But, for example, if what you're looking at and the generic example that I'm going to be using over and over is the isobar contours of a weather forecast. And it would be you'd lose credibility if your isobar is crossed, right? I mean, the isobars are almost parallel, and thermal contour plots of the temperature have to be realistic. They don't have to be accurate, but they have to be realistic. And they can be smooth, but they don't have to be smooth. What's important is that they look right and they don't intersect and they don't do anything that just destroys anybody's confidence in the results. So what I'm going to do is quickly give you the background sort of context for how we looked at this. First of all, I want to point out that what I'm going to be talking about is really a progress report, a work in progress, sort of a snapshot of where we are, that this is an ongoing research project that's not only related to visualization but to effective numerical solution of the underlying problems as well. And the collaborators in recent years have included a list of students and colleagues that I've listed in the slide. So this is sort of just a report of work in progress. Now, the basic problem and difficulty associated with this idea is that the results that are being produced now in the large-scale scientific simulations are approximate solutions to large systems of differential equations, usually PDEs rather than ODEs. And these simulations are so massive and so large scale that it's clearly true that only a small fraction of the data that's produced by a single simulation will ever be viewed by anybody. The data will be produced because it has to be as part of the solution, numerical approximation, but no one's ever going to be able to look at it all. It's a massive amount, terabytes of data that are generated by a single simulation of the climate over the next 10 years, for example. And so why store and transmit all this information if nobody's ever going to view it? And so what our initial approach was to develop and sort of transmit the data only when necessary. So we consider storing and transmitting only enough data so that when the particular piece of data is going to be queried, then you can regenerate that data efficiently. And the examples are in climate models. And so you run your model predicting what the atmospheric pollutants will be like in the next 50 years. But you might only be interested in the smog conditions around Toronto in the year 2020 to 2022. You're not interested in the whole 50-year cycle and the concentration of pollutants everywhere. And weather forecasting, another example, and nuclear waste management. This is These are three areas where there's massive amount of computation being done. We're generating these huge data sets, and we are never going to look at them except in very specific circumstances. So that's sort of the background type of problem, the generic problem that we're interested in, and we want to be able to effectively solve those problems. Now, there are several difficulties that come up in these large-scale simulations, and I just want to list them. We're not going to spend much time on some of these, but just to put in context where visualization fits in. So generating the data initially, we need to develop, and lots of money and effort is being spent in developing new algorithms, high-performance scientific computation. The grand challenge problems in the U.S. is a lot of money being spent on producing supercomputers and new algorithms for generating solutions to these mathematical models. Storing the data structures, designing hierarchical storage devices to store the data that's generated, transmitting the data, the bandwidth involved has to be improved because we have distributed computation. We're using a computational grid to generate the approximate solutions, and there's distributed collaboration in designing the mathematical model and running the model and accessing the data. So the distributed collaboration means that people in widely distributed geographically will be viewing the same data sets. And so we have a bandwidth problem as well as a data storage problem. And we want to view the data in a very meaningful way. That means, for example, contour plots in two dimensions, level surfaces in three dimensions, the use of color, sound, animation. We'd like to be able to use all these tools to view the data, even though the data might be stored remotely. And, of course, we want to mine the data. If we're looking at weather maps, we want to look at isobar charts. We want to predict where the isobars are piling up because that's usually an indication of high winds. And so there is a data mining type of activity for any of these data sets that are generated. You're looking for patterns, and we'd like to do that in a very selective way. Now, traditionally, numerical analysts have focused on scientific computing, and my research as well is focused on the first part of this effort, the developing new, more effective algorithms, more reliable algorithms for solving ODEs or PDEs. But the visualization stage can be just as expensive, and it's often ignored by the scientific computing community. It's not ignored by people in the graphics community and the visualization, but numerical analysts have ignored that part of this task, even though it can be just as expensive. So what we're going to look at is the issues that I want to just be very carefully distinguished and introduce and related to this investigation are as follows. I want to distinguish between accuracy and resolution. I use the term accuracy to mean the accuracy of which the numerical method will approximate the solution of the differential equation, the partial differential equation. And that accuracy depends on the order of the numerical method and the effectiveness of the numerical method and sort of the smoothness of the underlying problem. The second notion is resolution. If we want to display and visualize the solution, we have to be able to at least have the approximate solution on a fine enough mesh so that the displayed, however we decide to display our solution, it's non-distracting and it looks realistic. So the resolution is a characteristic of the display device, and the accuracy is a characteristic of the mathematical model and the numerical method we're using. There's a cost bandwidth trade-off that we have to worry about, and the measures of cost we're going to look at are bandwidth, storage requirements, and computer time. Now, the related issues, the techniques that we developed that have applications to image compression and to interpolation of scattered, unstructured data, that the the techniques we developed have been used in both of these areas. I'm not going to talk about it today, but it's just a natural extension of the technique to look at view it as an image compression mechanism or as another mechanism for interpolating unstructured data. Now, the basic idea is that we use a just-in-time strategy for refining the approximate solution. Okay, we set up a mathematical model using numerical method to give us an approximate solution to that mathematical model, and then we want to visualize the approximate solution. So these are the steps we take. And to visualize the approximate solution, it turns out that what we'll have to do is refine the approximate solution, which is usually computed on a grid that's rather coarse, a coarse mesh, and then we have to refine to match the resolution of the visualizer, of the renderer, and it requires that we project this coarse mesh solution onto a fine mesh. The idea that we have is that we will only generate the fine mesh refinement only when it's requested and only for a subset of the data. So you store and transmit accurate information that's produced by the numerical method that's associated with a coarse data, coarse grid, and then you generate the fine mesh data only when investigating a particular portion of the data. So the request is generated and responded to in real time, and there might be some computational effort required to take the coarse grid solution and produce a fine grid refinement. One of the advantages is that we use, in this refinement stage, we use local information only. It's ideal for implementation then on a multiprocessor or on a distributed processor, right? Because you only use local information to refine a single coarse grid solution. Now, so the approximate solution will be accessed and investigated with this kind of overview. Then the way we access and investigate approximate solutions will vary considerably depending on the context. In the initial stage, we'll generate the approximate solution in some supercomputer or high-performance environment using maybe a language such as Fortran C or some special purpose language to approximate the partial differential equation or the differential equation. We're using sort of sophisticated packages that are available and available in usually adaptive methods that are high order and produce the initial approximation. And then once the numerical approximation is available, then we want to visualize the approximate solution in an environment that allows and provides easy tools for, and such tools are VDK and TechPlot, generic tools that are available, but there are other plotting routines that are used in engineering and science all the time. Then there might be another use of these. We want to do data mining or just some other mathematical investigation of our model. We might want to change a parameter, resolve some problems, and compute some sensitivity coefficients. And that's usually done in a problem-solving environment, general-purpose ones such as, say, MAPLE or MATLAB or Mathematica. But there are specific problem-solving environments dedicated to, say, mechanical engineering and structural dynamics, fluid problems. Those special environments require a different, it will take a numerical approximation and will visualize and allow people to investigate properties of the equations. Now, I'm going to focus on the second step, the visualization of the solutions, and I'm going to use the MATLAB. In the examples we give, I'm going to look at MATLAB as the problem-solving environment that we're working in when we're visualizing the approximate solution. Now, there is certainly a need, I just made the comment on the bottom, in these three different environments, you want to share and the same approximate solutions. And so we have to have sort of a language-independent data structure to represent the coarse mesh accurate approximate solution. And we do this by using, in our case, a piecewise polynomial as the approximate solution. and we'll generate this piecewise polynomial in this high-performance environment and then share it with in the other environment, make it accessible in the other environments. This piecewise polynomial is going to be a multivariate polynomial, and the degree of the polynomial depends on the we've done experiments up to three-dimensional problems, but it can go to higher dimensions. It's just more expensive when it does that. And we're going to focus, as I mentioned, on the visualization. So let me just give you an outline of how we're going to proceed to do this. So we're going to show how this approach can be effective. We're going to look at a one-dimensional example, an ODE, because everything, all the difficulties that arise can be presented in one dimension, and that's where the bulk of our previous work was associated, and we've got a lot of results and developed some software. We've extended, in the last year and a half or 2 years, we've extended the idea that we had played with in one dimensions for quite a few years. We'd extended it to two- and three-dimensional problems at PDEs, and I'll give a generic example. Expect you to keep in mind the generic example, which I've already mentioned, which is a generation of temperature contours or isobar charts and weather maps. And animation can be used to show the evolution over time of these contours or of these surface maps. So the animation that we'll be interested in the 3D examples will be to think of the isobars moving over time. So in your nightly weather forecast, they tell you over the next 24 hours how the high pressure and low pressure systems are going to move, and you see this nice little movie as it shows you the evolution over the next 24 hours, so you can tell whether you're going to have high winds and what the temperature is going to be at different times of the day. And that's sort of the generic example that we're going to look at, and how expensive is it to generate those moving contour plots and movies of animated contour plots. And in particular, if I have time at the end, I'll talk about the fast contouring algorithm we've developed that allows us to compute the contour maps directly from the piecewise polynomial without having to produce a surface plot, which is more expensive and which is a standard way that most packages proceed. Okay, so the 1D example that will motivate the kind of issues that arise, this is a standard two-dimensional ODE. It's a traditional, anybody that's taken a course in differential equations or numerical analysis has seen it. It's a Lotka-Volterra equation that describes the interaction between a predator and prey, rabbits and wolves, for example, in an isolated environment in the Arctic. And the first component, Y1, represents the prey population, say the rabbits, and Y2 represents the predator, wolves, at time X. And you write down the system of equations that tells you how, as the rabbits increase in population, the wolves get fed well, and their population increases, and the rabbits' population dies out. And you get this cyclic behavior. And the mathematical model then, you can solve this equation over 7 years. And, for example, here's a solution produced by the built-in package. It's produced by an eighth-order method that we produced at Toronto. This is an accurate representation of the behavior of that numerical solution over 7 years. The problem is it works too well. It's an adaptive method that gives a high accurate solution, and it can solve the problem in 34 time steps. So each of those x's is exactly on the curve. It's indistinguishable from being on the exact solution. We can't write down a closed form solution to this equation, by the way, so the only thing we could do is approximate it. And the difficulty is that this is a phase plane map, and this is the visualization of the discrete solution, and the only thing the visualizer can do to generate intermediate points is use piecewise linear, and that's very unsatisfactory. You can't tell where the maximums are occurring and the minimum, and the phase portrait is completely distracting and it wouldn't be very helpful. So although we've used high order and got a high accurate solution, the mesh size is so coarse that the solution can't be adequately displayed without extra information. And now the key thing is, as I mentioned, that this is 34 time steps, and it's just two cores a mesh for the visualizer. It's not two cores a mesh for the underlying solution. Now, people can say, well, we could use splines. Well, splines are helpful, but they're not the answer. And the reason is that the spline focuses on smoothness. It doesn't know anything about the fact that we've got a differential equation. The off-mesh accuracy, accuracy at off-mesh points, is not very good. It's restricted to fourth order at most, but the underlying method was eighth order, so it's producing a more accurate approximation at the x's. The phase portraits are still, although they're improved, they're crossing each other, and they're not realistic, and they're distracting, especially to somebody who expects a phase portrait to be non-intersecting, spiraling in. And so one of the things that we've done at Toronto is we've developed special purpose interpolants that provide off-mesh accuracy that's consistent with the mesh point accuracy. So here, what we've done is we developed an extension of a standard discrete numerical method to give us at off-mesh points between the x's here, the 34 time steps, accuracy that's comparable with the accuracy at the mesh points. If you use that interpolant, which is, in this case, because we're looking at an eighth-order method, an eighth-order polynomial, piecewise polynomial, then that eighth-order piecewise polynomial, when you look at the phase portrait, is going to give you a very realistic representation and the expected shape, the spiral, the familiar spiral as a population. Now, this we're plotting the population of the predator versus the prey, and you see over the 7 years, we start out here, and we cycle in towards a steady state. And this gives you a very accurate representation of the predator and prey population over those 7 years. And we didn't have to do much extra work, except we do have to deliver the piecewise polynomial. Now, how much does that cost to extend the method? Well, in one dimension, it doesn't cost that much. We've got a first-order system of differential equations describing the interaction between the predator and prey. And we can apply any Runge-Kutta method. And in this case, a p-th-order S-stage Runge-Kutta method can be applied to this ODE, and it gives us the approximation at the mesh points. Of course, it is a sophisticated strategy for choosing the step size, adapting the step size to the accuracy that's specified. And these are standard software methods that produce a discrete approximation. And the KJs are the sample. You do derivative samples at the current step between xn and xn plus 1, step size is size h, and we apply this. This is the underlying numerical method. It's the basis of a lot of software. And what we have done is we've recognized that one can extend this. This gives us a discrete solution at the mesh points once the step size is chosen. And now we want to extend this so we have off-mesh accuracy. And so we've introduced and analyzed and developed a whole class of methods, Runge-Kutta methods, that allow us to extend, that is, add a few extra stages, change the coefficients so now they become polynomials rather than constants, because now we want at intermediate values of x between xi minus 1 and xi, we have polynomial coefficients, and we take a linear combination of the same stages. Now we've added a few extra stages. And these coefficients are polynomials of degree p. Now, if we're careful in how we add the extra stages and choose these polynomial coefficients, then one can prove that the extra stages and the polynomials we've added allow us to find a polynomial, u sub I, on the ith interval, that is of degree p and agrees with the true solution to order h to the p. As long as the underlying Runge-Kutta form there was pth order, we can develop such an extension, a continuous extension then of the discrete solution. Now it turns out that it's relatively inexpensive to do this. That's usually s bar minus s is of order. It's no more than 20% extra work. So it's approximately or less than or equal to 0.2 times S. So you do about 20% extra work if you count the number of derivative evaluations or sample function evaluations as the amount of work involved. You can extend your discrete solution to a continuous piecewise polynomial on the whole interval. Now, it turns out if the order of the method is less than 4, in fact, this is free. You can get interpolation for free. And up to eighth order is the maximum cost. And at eighth order, it costs you about 40% to generate this piecewise polynomial. But you're taking large steps so that you do gain overall for doing that. Now, what's the advantage of this? Well, the advantage of this is now two different numerical methods using very different order will give you indistinguishable numerical results. And for example, here's a fourth order method here using 47 steps because it's lower order. The average step size is going to be smaller. And remember, this is our eighth order method that solved the problem in about 34 steps. The points at which the approximate solution are generated are completely incompatible. So if we because it's an adaptive method, adaptive step size, if we compared the two discrete solutions, it wouldn't be obvious that they were the same. But if you plot the piecewise polynomials, they're indistinguishable, both as an XY plot and as a phase portrait. So the one big advantage is we can compare two different numerical approximations, even if they're produced by completely different methods. Visually, you can compare them, but you can actually sample them at any point and compare their actual values and see whether they agree as a point-wise evaluation as well. So now the user isn't distracted by any artifacts. He can just visualize and see the solution. Yes?
So but it's, you are still getting an eighth-order solution just between the mesh points. I don't see why that guarantees that the phase portrait would not tell the effect.
Would not what? Oh, it wouldn't guarantee it. No, we can't guarantee that. But what we can say is that the phase portrait is going to be more accurate at off-mesh points and more likely not to intersect because you know the true solution doesn't intersect. Now, if your error tolerance is too forgiving, then the phase portrait could still intersect. And so you have to tighten your tolerance before you can observe this non-intersection. So it's less likely to intersect. And if it does intersect, then the user would just reduce his error tolerance from, say, 10 to the minus 3 to 10 to the minus 6, and then it wouldn't intersect. Now, of course, there might be still places where it could. So that relationship is more the conditioning of the underlying problem than it is the numerical method. Okay, so we'd like to extend this idea to 2 and 3 dimensions. And so now, and the details, the mathematical details of how this approach can be extended to 2 and 3 dimensions is covered in a paper that appeared 2 years ago. And so let's consider this is following two-dimensional PD from the ALPAC collection of differential equations. So it's a simple second-order problem defined on a rectangular domain with boundary conditions. If we don't worry too much about the mathematics, it's just a two-dimensional PDE. And what I want to show you is that the same difficulties that arose in ODEs arise in PDEs, but it's a little more obvious. So if we were able, the first plot shows you the contour plot and surface plot using piecewise linear. So you solve the problem with an accurate method on an 8x8 grid. And then you use piecewise linear to generate the off-mesh points. And then surface representation or surface plot and the contour plot are very distracting because the piecewise linear gives you no accuracy between mesh points. Now, on the other hand, in the second case, what I've used here is a differential equation interpolant where one is given the same 8x8 coarse mesh with accurate data at the 64 mesh points, and then you use a bivariate polynomial, piecewise polynomial, to represent the solution at off-mesh points. But you represent the solution by an interpolant that knows about the differential equation and so has preserves the accuracy at the off-mesh points. Now, in this example, I've used a fourth-order method, so I've used a bicubic. I've introduced a bicubic, that is, for each of the 64 elements of the coarse mesh. I define a bicubic, collectively define the piecewise bicubic, which then you can render on a fine mesh. And so in the second part, in the second graph here, what we've done is we refine the 8x8 coarse mesh associated with the accurate solution by an 16x16 refinement. So in each of these 64 coarse elements, we've refined an X and Y in a 16x16 refinement. And so this piecewise polynomial is then sampled on a fine mesh of 64 points for each of the coarse mesh elements to give us this rendering. So what we've done here is we've done a surface plot and a contour plot of that piecewise polynomial, sampled at about 130 by 130 mesh to give us this very smooth, very non-distracting surface plot and contour plot. So the idea is the underlying coarse mesh is 8x8, and then each of those 64 elements is further refined in a 16x16 refinement. But this 16x16 refinement uses only the single polynomial on each of those cases. So we have to do a multi-point evaluation of a polynomial. We don't have to resolve the PDE. Now, normally, to go from here to here, if you didn't have any knowledge about the PDE, you'd have to apply your numerical method with a very small mesh, with, in fact, the mesh that's a product of 8x16. And so that would be a very expensive computation if you applied your numerical method. What we've done, our technique allows us to produce these polynomials independently over the 60, using local information only. Now, that's for a two-dimensional problem. Similarly, for a three-dimensional problem, we can look at a wave equation. So what I want to do is just to show you the another example here. We have two space dimensions, x and y, and time, so we have to look at a trivariate polynomial. In all these cases, when I look at bivariate and trivariate, I'm looking at cubics. But the idea approach goes up to quartics and quintics, and for higher order problems, you would have to use higher degree polynomials, multivariate polynomials. Okay, so here's the standard wave equation, the approximate solution of this problem. So we're interested in finding the evolution over time of the surface and how you can think of this as a membrane, a drum that's vibrating. We give it an initial pulse and you watch it vibrate. The approximate solution can be effectively displayed using a movie animation, and we've done that. I'll show you a few of the still frames from that movie. And to show the evolution of this membrane over time, you need a fine mesh resolution of at least 128 by 128 by 128. So that's quite a large amount of data when you're looking at the height field of the membrane over time. Now, what I want to show you then is, this is the snapshot at the initial time, so this is the initial conditions, and I want to show you two situations corresponding to, the first one corresponds to a 10 by 10 by 10 coarse mesh, and remember, the fine mesh resolution required to get a reasonable visualization has to be at 120 by 120 by 120. So we have a 1,000-to-1 reduction in the amount of data if we use this piecewise, if we use this coarse grid. And I'm showing two different ways of visualizing the solution, one through a surface plot and one through a contour plot. You can see in both cases, the coarse grid still shows some artifacts on both the surface and the contour. If we went to a different coarse grid, and in the second case, the coarse grid is 20 by 20 by 20, so the data reduction involved in this one is more like 100 to 1 than 1,000 to 1. And here we get a very smooth contours and surface representation in which there's no artifact from the underlying coarse grid visible. Our piecewise polynomial gives us a very smooth rendering. Now, the piecewise polynomial is not guaranteed to be even continuous along contact points, and yet it's accurate enough to, so if there's any discontinuities, the jump in the discontinuity is so small that you can't see it in the visualizer. So one of the messages is smoothness isn't really that important if the jumps in the discontinuities are small. And using these piecewise polynomials, we observe that. Now, what I want to do is just show you that now this is the initial time. If we allow the visualization to move to smoothly move from t equals 0 to t equals 2 seconds, in which this membrane bounces up and down twice, then we see that at intermediate stages in the snapshots have a similar effect. Here, after 1.3 seconds, that's just past halfway through, the membrane is sort of shifted completely. It started off below and now it's slightly above. The contour plots are very smooth, and the surface plot, the lighting effect and texture looks fine. You can see a little bit of, I mean, the first one in which we had a 1,000-to-1 reduction in storage and the computation time is reduced, the artifacts are there, but they might not be distracting. Users who are visualizing the solution might be able to live with that kind of distortion. Certainly, I guess they can't complain. There's no apparent visual distortion here. On the other hand, if they want to zoom in and view a certain segment of the computation, they might see a little bit of distortion. They want to zoom in on this line or get a more contours in the contour plot. And finally, after 2 seconds, I think just to show you that this is after a complete cycle, the artifacts are still visible, and the lack of smoothness of these contours can still be a little distracting, because really they should be more oval shaped like they are in the bottom diagram. Now, what I want to do is just leave this slide just for a moment, because it also illustrates something that I want to come back to. But let's just see the amount of work involved in generating that. Now, it turns out that how much effort is required to generate that piecewise polynomial given the coarse mesh data, that is the accurate information at the coarse mesh only, and then we generate this piecewise tricubic in this case. So for 3D problems, this tricubic associated with the quasi-linear PDE. Now, the underlying PDE has to be known and has to be quasi-linear. And for each of the coarse mesh elements, we determine a single polynomial. So for each of the elements E, a single polynomial degree less than or equal to D in each of the variables T, X, and Y. So trivariate, think of tricubic, so think of D is equal to 3. And so you have to interpolate the mesh data, which you have available, the accurate information, and then you use the differential equation to add the extra constraints. And think of them as being collocation constraints, although they're not. Collocation would be nonlinear. We don't want to have nonlinear equations. We'll call them almost collocation, because we almost satisfy the differential equation at m points, where m is the number of degrees of freedom we have to satisfy in order to uniquely define our polynomial. The multivariate polynomial has d plus 1 cubed coefficients. D is a degree, remember, of the polynomial, and we're working in three dimensions. And so we have this many unknowns to define our polynomial, so we have to have m extra linear constraints. And so looking at the differential equation, we do almost collocation to specify these extra constraints, local information only. And then we solve that linear system of equations. So we set up and solve a single system of linear equations to generate, for each coarse element, the corresponding tricubic. In our case, tricubic, but in general, trivariate polynomial. So that's the amount of work involved. And it's once you've got that polynomial, then we can evaluate this polynomial, this single polynomial, at any number of mesh points in the current element to give us the refinement we want, which allows us then to generate either the contour plot or the surface plot. So that's the basic approach and the amount of work that's involved when we're working on a three-dimensional problem. Now, the thing I want to focus on now is to notice that when we are generating visualizations and we're interested in both surface plots and contour plots, then it makes there's an inherent cost that we should expect to pay. If the resolution of the display device requires a fine mesh of NFM points just to get some realistic rendering and a non-distracting view of one-dimensional curve, then we should expect that if we're looking at a two-dimensional object, like a surface representation, that the amount of work we should do to generate this information should probably be order of NFM squared. Because if we've got a surface representation, we'd like to have lighting effects, we'd like to be able to rotate it and view it from different angles, and so it's not surprising that it should cost us something that's proportioned to the fine mesh squared. On the other hand, if we're looking at just a single one-dimensional object, such as a single contour line, a single curve, then it shouldn't cost us NFM squared, but more NFM. The cost to produce a single curve should be proportional to the resolution of the display device and not the square of that resolution. And that's sort of an intuitive feeling. And so the contour algorithms that are built into most environments cost you at least this much, because you have to generate on a fine mesh the numerical solution and then contour that using piecewise linear fit to that fine mesh approximation. So we'd like to avoid that. We'd like to generate the contours directly from the piecewise polynomial without having to evaluate the piecewise polynomial at too many points. So that's the objective, and that's sort of the intuitive motivation for why we're interested in doing fast contouring. So let me just tell you what the basic MATLAB contouring, which is probably the basic contouring algorithm of any environment in which you're visualizing solutions. You have your coarse element, where you have accurate information at the mesh points. You want to generate a contour intersection of the contour line that you're looking for, and let's assume that you know the contour crosses here and here, and so there is a curve that you want to follow and display across this coarse element. Now, what our approach would do for MATLAB is it says, okay, we have a piecewise polynomial we've introduced on the whole collectively. On this element, then, we have a multivariate polynomial. That's, in this case, it'd be a bivariate polynomial that represents the solution accurately at any off-mesh point. So you use that bivariate polynomial, evaluate it on a fine mesh, and for this diagram, a 4x4 refinement, evaluate that polynomial, that bivariate polynomial, at each of the mesh points, okay? So each of the 16 mesh points. Then supply that to the contour plot, a contour package. So that what the contour package will do a piecewise linear fit to those mesh point values that were generated by your piecewise polynomial, by the evaluation of your piecewise polynomial. Now, that's all you can do. That's still an improvement over asking the PDE method to generate this fine mesh accuracy. That'll cost a lot more in general. What we've done here is that we've generated this off-mesh uniform refinement of the coarse mesh, generates those function values using our polynomial, our single polynomial that we've just produced by solving a system of linear equations. So the contour, the contour package then would use piecewise linear interpolant of this underlying this fine mesh solution. The cost is going to be order NFM squared to generate the contours, because you've got to generate these NFM squared off-mesh points by evaluating a polynomial. But it's more expensive than we'd expect, because we're approximating a one-dimensional object, and that's why I said that we're going to be interested in fast algorithms. Now, there's two fast algorithms that we're going to look at. Each of those is really follows a two-stage process. We have pass one and then pass two, which is here. And these are, I don't know if you can read that, probably not, but it is necessary. What you have to think about it, each of these is a loop over, the algorithm involves looping over each element of the coarse element, looking to see what the maximum and minimum value of the polynomial is, the associated polynomial is in that element. Once we've got the maximum and minimum values for each of the elements, then we can look at each element again once we know what the contour level is, V. So we're looking at contouring when the polynomial, it's a single polynomial now because we're looking at the single element, when the polynomial takes on the value V. So you first see if the contour level V is, if the minimum, if V lies between the minimum and the maximum of the current element, this is the second pass after we determine the minimum and maximum, and if it does, if V is in there, then there is a non-zero intersection, so we want to look at the intersection of the contour curve with that element, and we do that by looking at each edge of the element, each of the four edges if we use tensor product grids, which in this example, but it extends to triangles too. You look at each edge of the element. If V intersects the edge, then you keep track of, you count the number of intersection points. And once you've done that, this is, you then contour according to the number of intersection points you had, you do a contour. So the most common case is going to be the case that I've just, is going to be two, that that your element, which your coarse element, is going to have two intersection points with the edges, that is, the polynomial associated with this element takes on the value V at two points on the edges, and the contour plot is going to look like this, and what we want to do is approximate that curve. Now, I'll only consider the case where we have two intersection points, although there's the other cases are easy to consider, and I just won't talk about them today. The one thing I want to point out is that it's easy to find these intersection points because our polynomial, if we keep it a constant x value or a constant y value, that is, on each of the four edges, either x is constant or y is constant, that bivariate polynomial reduces to a univariate polynomial. And solving a univariate polynomial is easy, so finding these intersection points is easy and low cost, and so that aspect of this outer, the inner loop and the second pass, is can be done very quickly. We just have to solve a univariate polynomial equation, and if we're using bicubics, as I am in this example, it's solving a cubic equation and finding out if there's a root between the initial and final point. So it's easy to generate these intersection points. Once you have the intersection points of the contour line, then how do we generate the approximate, the contour interval without having to evaluate the polynomial at the very fine mesh, which is what we do when we use the standard packages.
If it's just a cubic polynomial, why is it a problem to evaluate it at the point?
Oh, it's just... it's a bicubic, and you can evaluate it at the fine mesh, but it's going to cost you, the amount of work is going to be proportional to the NFM squared, right? And what we want to do is reduce that to NFM. And we're going to evaluate a polynomial at NFM points. And as the resolution increases, and then it's going to be significantly faster to do it this way. No, I mean, it can be done, and it's still effective. What we want to do is see how much faster we can proceed. Now, there are two fast algorithms I'm going to just give you an overview of and that we've implemented. The first is to notice that we'll call this the intercept method. It's based on the observation that for any fixed value of x, so what we want to do is get points on this contour line, as I've mentioned here. And so for any fixed x, P sub d, this polynomial reduces to univariate polynomial of degree d in t. Let's call that q of t. Of course, q of t will have its coefficients depending on x, and we have to solve a single equation. So the idea is refine only in one direction, along the x direction, for example. At each of these refinement points, you form the corresponding q of t, which is in our case cubic, but in polynomial of degree d in y. Solve when that polynomial in y is equal to v, and that is, you can find exactly where the intersect takes place. And then that is one of the points. So what you're doing is you're refining only in one direction. At each refinement point, you solve a polynomial equation, a univariate polynomial equation, to see where the contour line intersects, and then you connect those points. To get a realistic representation, then you refine NFM on the fine mesh in that direction. So the cost. Okay, that's important. And we'll come back to that. Let me delay that to the second technique. In fact, I'll make a comment here about what you do there. Now, the cost is order NFM for each element, but the constant can be quite large, since the amount of work involves determining the roots of a polynomial. Secondly, these tasks aren't easily vectorizable, and on an environment like MATLAB, that can be important. Now, we could, as Michael just asked about the question, what happens if we have sort of sal points, you don't have a unique function value if you refine in X. Well, you could choose to refine in T if that happens. If this curve sort of bends back on itself as you're coming along, then at this point, you have two solutions, and the idea I've just talked about will break down. You could refine in X and then refine in Y. But there's an alternative technique, and I'll come back to it. It's just that one could improve this to handle that saddle point type case, but it's probably better to look at our second approach. So you can refine in T rather than X if it does curve back on you, if that gives you better behavior. Now, there is the constant can be quite large, so even though that's an improvement, there's another technique which we call the simple ODE method. And that is, you attempt to directly approximate this contour curve. Let's parameterize it as x and t of x. And it's the value of t of x that satisfies this equation, right? Our polynomial now, the approximate solution, is equal to v over a prescribed range of x values. Now we have, let me just put back on the picture that we're looking at. We know the range of x values we're looking at. We know the two intersection points, so we know the range of x values for which we're looking for this parameterized curve. And the idea then is to differentiate this equation with respect to x. If we do that, then we get an ODE rather than a PDE. The derivative with respect to x of t of x is equal to this right-hand side, which is a function of t of x next. It's a standard ODE. And so what we can do is now what we've done is we've shown that this curve here that we're trying to follow is really just a simple ODE. We can set up a simple ODE for it. The solution of this ODE that I've just written down there then is the contour we're trying to follow. Not only that, but we can use the observation that at any point, in particular at the point x1, but at any x value, we can find a position on this curve by using the technique we've just talked about, the FCINT, solving a polynomial, single univariate polynomial. So we can generate an initial value at x1 to convert this ODE into a standard initial value problem. Well, if we have a standard initial value problem, the motivation at the beginning, I showed you how we could use a polynomial to approximate this solution to initial value problem by using a continuous numerical method. And so the idea of this approach is to look at this ODE, generate an initial condition for it associated with the intersection point, and then integrate it for x over the range of interest, that is, until it leaves the coarse element, integrate that ODE numerically with a continuous method. With that continuous method, you get a piecewise polynomial and evaluate that piecewise polynomial. Now, we're looking at cubics in this case, or that Hermite polynomial. Evaluate it, do a multi-point evaluation of a single polynomial to give you this off-mesh, to give you an approximation to the curve. And that's essentially what we do. What you do then is we determine an approximate contour by approximating the solution of this ODE. So what we have, Dan, let me just schematically represent it. So we're starting with two points of intersection. We introduce, now, what step size do we use for our ODE solver? Well, it turns out since we're using, in this case, a bicubic, we will use a fourth order method, to take two steps. This turns out to be an heuristic that works. You don't have to do any adaptive step size or error control on your ODE method. And that means that we're looking at a Hermite piecewise polynomial interpolating the solution and derivative at these three points, piecewise polynomial cubic over each subinterval, evaluate that Hermite cubic at the fine mesh points to generate approximate values on this fine mesh. So that's what we do, and that works out to be the most effective and fastest technique. If the ODE is close to singular, well, what is that? If you look back at the problem that Michael pointed out, if the ODE is close to singular, then the denominator here is going to goes to zero, so this ODE becomes singular. Then you've got to parameterize differently. And so instead of parameterizing it by t of x, we choose a parameterization x of tt. You get a different ODE, and the cost is still the same. So the cost is order NFM elements. Now, if it turns out that if neither parameterization is suitable for the whole integration, that is, this curve wraps back on itself in both directions, then you can do an arc length interpretation. It's just about double the cost, because now you have a system of ODEs, initial value problems. You parameterize it in terms of arc length, and you will avoid, you can guarantee that this problem won't be singular, but it'll cost you twice as much as a single parameterization would be. And in all our testing, we've never found it necessary to adopt this arc length type of parameterization. Okay, let me very quickly then just give you some numerical results to show you this works. This is a modeled problem, a PDE of modeling a control rod in a nuclear reactor. The surface plot and contour plot generated by MATLAB with an efficient numerical method is given here. And this is what we'd like to be able to reproduce, only faster, if we go just for contours only, and avoid the surface plot, but just looking at contour plot representation. And what I want to convince you with, how do you tell whether contours are accurate or not? Well, let me just show you that here are for the three different algorithms, the one that does the extra work by evaluating the piecewise polynomial on all the fine grid points. Here is the first fast method, FCINT, and the ODE method. And what I'm trying to show you here is that for different fine meshes, this is a fine mesh, a 4x4 and an 8x8 refinement, these two columns, and we see that we get indistinguishable contour plots. So they're equally good or equally bad, because they representations or contouring of the underlying numerical approximate solution. One can see these are slightly better if we use a finer mesh 4x4 rather than, I think this is 2x2 if we look at it. The other thing, if we're zooming in and want to see the behavior in a certain region, this would be a more reliable, and if you went to you could go to a finer mesh if you wanted to find subtle changes in the contour lines if necessary. Okay, so let me just wrap up with the discussion of some conclusions. The direct computation of the contour lines can be efficient and accurate. It's not necessary to approximate the solution surface as an intermediate result. The techniques we've developed apply equally to unstructured rectangular meshes and to triangular meshes in two dimensions and three dimensions. They actually apply in four dimensions as well if you have three space dimensions and time. The fast algorithms can be extended to apply to more general contouring problems. In a recent survey paper in SIAM Review, Grandin talks about a lot of contour type problems that come up in industrial applications, and the techniques we've introduced using piecewise polynomials can be applied directly there to those class of problems as well. And finally, the approach. Now, this is a basic approach of using multivariate piecewise polynomials. can be extended in several ways. We've assumed that accurate information on the solution and derivatives, low-order derivatives, are available at the mesh points. If you don't have low-order derivative information available at the mesh points, the underlying problem might not be mathematically well posed, but if it is, then we can substitute the derivative information with nearby solution values. You go off mesh a bit, you interpolate a little bit of off mesh information, but it's still local because it's only local, very close, nearby mesh elements that you would resort to get this extra information. You can look at first order and higher order, mixed order systems of PDEs. The technique works. You have to be very careful that the mathematical problem is well posed to begin with, but if it is, then the interpolation conditions will lead to a unique polynomial, and the multivariate extension will work. We can use total degree D interpolation rather than tensor product polynomial. It gives fewer unknowns, same order but larger error coefficients. In some case, we can guarantee continuity because we're using a total degree D interpolation rather than tensor product. As I say, for D problems, we've run some where you have three space dimensions and you want to look at evolution over time. And extension to special classes of nonlinear PDEs. I mean, most of we assume that the PDE is linear or quasi-linear. That is, the coefficients of the highest derivatives that appear in the PDE have to be linear in T and can't depend on the solution. Now, there are some special classes of problems that are coming up in fluid mechanics, fluid dynamics, in which the higher order derivatives might have some nonlinear terms. And so we've been considering extending these class to those class of problems, and we've got some success, especially when we're looking at low-degree polynomials like cubics and quartics.